From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in California on June 20th, the day bars reopened in Los Angeles County. According to data by Foursquare, 500,000 people visited nightlife spots the weekend after that reopening date. Over the last 2 weeks, the county has seen a 40% increase in coronavirus cases among people between the ages of 18 and 40. The increase reflects a trend across the country. According to the New York Times, people in their 20s and 30s are making up a growing percentage of new coronavirus cases in cities and states where the virus is now surging. In Arizona, people ages 20 to 44 account for half of the state's cases. In Florida, the median age for testing positive is now 35. And just yesterday here in Monroe County, the Public Health Department reported that 17 of the 29 new local coronavirus cases are people in their 20s. While some of these data points really reflect contact tracing, sure, or healthcare workers being exposed. We know there's a lot of young healthcare workers. That's not everything. Public health officials throughout the United States are warning that young people are spreading the virus in social settings. But with bars and restaurants reopening in many places, including here in Rochester, we've seen young people gather in tight spaces without masks, like the crowding we've seen recently on Park Avenue and in other places. Are many of these young people disregarding physical distancing guidelines, or is there a lack of guidance? Does reopening bars and restaurants imply safety when perhaps more conversations are needed? And what does the rise in cases among young people mean for the future of reopening, especially when it comes to schools and colleges? This hour, our panel of 20-somethings discuss their perspectives of the pandemic and how people in their demographic have reacted to it. And I'd like to welcome our guests now. Michaela Heath is an intern with Leloup Public Relations. Michaela, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Jace Meyer-Crosby is with us, a theater professional. Jace, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Danielle Oakes is an EFL, English as a Foreign Language teacher. Danielle, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Tanner Schmidt is a Government Affairs Associate. Tanner, welcome. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
I'd like each of you to briefly describe your circumstances now, where you are, and how life has been since March, April, because you're all in sort of different circumstances, and these are, frankly, you all have very interesting stories and about what's been going on in the last few months. So let's kind of go through that. Michaela, I'll start with you. What's life been like for you?
Life for me has definitely been a roller coaster. When everything started, I was in college at SUNY Oswego, and our spring break was just starting. So a lot of people had left for spring break and were not permitted to come back. I opted to stay there and was quarantined on my campus until graduation in May. So it was definitely a roller coaster because of the things that were happening outside of my campus and then out of my campus. They had a lot of restrictions and rules that we had to obey by. And then after that, I had to come back to Rochester. I'm from Avon, so I'm living in Avon with those guidelines. But it has definitely been up and down and roller coaster ride for sure, just with having to deal with social distancing, wearing masks, and not being able to, as a college senior, have those proper goodbyes and having to not have a proper ceremony. So it's definitely been an emotional roller coaster for sure.
Okay. Jace, why don't you describe your circumstances?
So I am immunocompromised and therefore was quarantining really strictly for the entire month of March, April, and May as well, which meant as a full-time theater professional, I completely lost any ability to do that work. There's just really no way for me to do that remotely in any way that that is paying. I've been fortunate that I've been able to collaborate with a lot of creatives to find, you know, creative virtual alternatives for making, you know, nothing that's, you know, paying my bills. I am starting to explore a little bit of socializing with really social distancing and a lot of mask wearing. But for me, being in a vulnerable population for infection, you know, the pandemic's far from over for me.
Yeah. Danielle, tell us about your circumstances.
So I am currently living at home from currently, or from previously being in Korea, I was teaching English to college-level students there. In total, I lived in Korea for 3 years. But, yeah, so I was over there when the pandemic hit, and that was an experience in and of itself. And then I traveled home pretty much in the height of when the amidst all the chaos of the pandemic. So it was early April when I did decide to come home upon an email I received from the U.S. Embassy saying that we should find a way home as soon as possible or risk being stuck abroad indefinitely. So I did decide to come home because I was at the end of my 2-year contract with the job I was at anyways. So I made the decision to come home, and there was nowhere else for me to go. So, yep, so I've just been living at home with my mom, and that's honestly been a gift after being away for so long. So I've been cherishing the family bonding time that I've been gifted to, this opportunity that I've been gifted to spend more time with everyone.
Well, and if I can just ask briefly, Daniel, having been in South Korea at the outset of the pandemic, South Korea is often heralded as a country that handled it just about as well as anyone could.
Right.
What are some of the differences you saw, and what did you experience there in how South Korea handled the pandemic?
Yeah, well, to first start off, I think that a lot of people are forgetting that for a couple of weeks, Korea was pretty high up there. We were second to China in terms of numbers. So as soon as the country started to see an increase in cases and we had that cluster in Daegu, they did take proper measures to slow the pace. And so in a country where it is normal to wear masks, everybody was okay with wearing masks and wore them without any hesitation. So, yep, so we were all wearing masks. I was teaching my classes wearing a mask, and there were hand sanitizers all over. There were messages being broadcasted in public transport, places reminding people to socially distance themselves as much as possible and follow common sense procedures. But most importantly, I want to highlight the differences in their approach to quarantining and the measures that they implemented at airports. And I think that's important because we really didn't implement anything like that on a national level. And I think it did help them to slow the spread significantly just by having those procedures in place.
Yeah, no question. A very, very different kind of response. Tanner Schmidt, tell us about what's been going on with you.
Yeah, so for me, when the pandemic really hit and things started to close down, I was actually visiting a friend in Texas. And, you know, I went from having a full plane on my way down to, you know, being the only one on the plane on the way home. And, you know, for me, I was lucky to where I could continue working from home doing the social distancing. So I was lucky to be able to keep working. But, you know, throughout the pandemic, it's just been frustrating. I feel that, you know, we have been getting guidance from the governor. I just feel that we've been receiving different messages from all over the place, from the president to what the governor is saying to what the local governments are saying. So I'd say it's been pretty frustrating, but I've been maintaining the social distancing. I've just started to go out and visit some friends in June, you know, as the state starts to reopen. But when, you know, during March, April, and May, I was really just staying home and not seeing anybody and try to follow those guidance that the governor has been releasing.
When this pandemic started, Tanner, did you take it seriously right away?
When it started, I actually did take it seriously right away. You know, I was watching what was happening in China, and we actually, you know, my company had to shut down some of the events that we were doing. So it started to get serious to me right away. It's actually towards the end where I maybe have been lacking a little bit in the social distancing, but no, right away I took it very seriously, and once things started to shut down, I flew right back from Texas and socially distanced since then.
So let me ask all of you then, and I'll go back across the panel, if you think your age cohort is, are you getting an unfair rap, or do you think it's justified? I mean, we do know the numbers are higher in young people right now, and some of the more sensationalistic headlines are blaming Gen Z or, younger millennials for this, or saying that younger people, 18 to 29, they don't care. They think they're invincible. They're not thinking about others. I am curious to know if you think that that's overblown, or if you think that there is, maybe some behavior that you'd like to see change. Tanner, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think there is some merit in saying that our age group probably hasn't been taking it as seriously, looking around at some of my peers and some of the friends that I grew up with. I think it's a mixed bag, really. I think there's a lot that as soon as the pandemic hit and things started to shut down, that took it very seriously, wore masks, stayed home. And then I think there is, there is a large population of people that didn't really care, that didn't understand why wearing a mask was important, that felt, they felt like the bar should be open. They should be able to do what they want, especially my friends that are in school that really want to do spring break. I felt that, it's really just a mixed bag. I think there's some unfairness going on, blaming it all on Gen Z, but I definitely see, when you look out and you see those bar populations, it is our age group that's out there and not properly social distancing. So I can definitely see the merit in those reports.
Okay, Danielle?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a portion of our population that's not taking it seriously. But I think that coming from Korea and having that perspective, I think there's a cultural element to it as well. And I think that Americans in general tend to value individualism versus Asian cultures and other cultures that have more of a collectivism approach. And so I definitely think that contributes overall because I think that our generation is maybe more guilty of it. And not being as selfless in the way we're approaching life during the pandemic, but I think it's like a cultural value as well.
Well, I think that idea has been floated many times, and I think it's hard to deny that there are significant cultural differences. Mm-hmm. I guess the question is, is it to age groups or more to sort of national populations? Jace, how do you see it? What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a little bit of what Daniel described in terms of an individualism and maybe a selfishness going on, but I don't know if that's the main factor in why we're seeing millennials and Gen Zers out in droves right now. I'm kind of noticing that we as a generation and the generation after us have a much bigger grasp and focus on mental and emotional health and the importance of maintaining relationships and support networks. And so I think we had people kind of prioritize that in two very different extreme ways. We had the people who were like, I need to keep seeing my friends, who never really took quarantine seriously. And then we had the people who were like, I need to protect my friends, who took quarantining incredibly seriously and felt very isolated. And now that things are starting to open up again, they're desperate to have that connection again and maybe aren't being as careful as they, or I should say we should be. Instead of finding creative ways to virtually and socially distantly socialize and maintain our support networks and our mental and emotional health, where we're kind of on one end or the other of that spectrum, and it's having a negative effect on us and on, our communities and their safety.
Yeah, and let me follow up that point with Jace, because I think this is important here. I hope no one is hearing this program and thinking that our connection staff is sort of attacking any age group or generation. We are trying to understand what's happening. But what Jace is talking about there is a range of perspective, knowing that eventually some kind of social contact has to happen. And I agree with a couple of writers who have had a lot to say this week about it. Zeynep Tufekci and Julia Marcus, writing in The Atlantic. And Zeynep Tufekci said that she wants to see national publications and newspapers stop using pictures of beaches. Yes, young people go to beaches, but the evidence is pretty good that beaches are a good place to be. Outdoors in general is a good place to be. It's indoor crowded bars, which are open in a lot of places, that are more of a concern during this pandemic. So we shouldn't just be attacking young people on beaches. But also, Julia Marcus says we shouldn't just be attacking people from 18 to 29 because they've been told by the government, bars are open. You can go there. And if they go there, are they necessarily to blame? Now, obviously, distancing is a good idea. But Marcus is saying, look, people have to socialize. And I think that's the point that I just heard you making, Jace. Julia Marcus is saying, if you ask people to go on an abstinence-only diet of just about anything, it doesn't work. It didn't work in the 80s with the AIDS epidemic. It doesn't work with social, you know, isolation during a pandemic. There has to be something in the middle. And it, to me, it sounds like what you're telling me is that, that your generation, or at least people in their 20s, are maybe not thinking too much about that, but they are expressing a natural human desire, which is we've got to have contact with each other.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I agree with you that I wish there were more resources about how to responsibly be social and find connection and not go insane during this time, rather than the very extremist, you have to be completely quarantined and you can't see anyone, or the very liberal sort of bars are open, let's go out and party. You know, I wish we were talking about grabbing a coffee with a friend and going for a walk, or picking up takeout at a favorite restaurant, having a picnic in the park, or things like this that are going to let us meet that very human desire and need without endangering ourselves and others.
All right, one more point on that before I turn to Michaela. When you say that, you know, you wish there was a little bit more guidance on this, we have seen different countries do very, very different things. You know, Danielle's talking about South Korea and how sort of normalized masking is and how quickly the government moved in and to say these are some of the things we have to do, and people adopted it. We've talked on this program about how Canada has advised families, if you've had a household bubble, pick another household and create a double bubble, and maybe no quarantine sort of guidelines there. Treat them all like individual family, but try to be very tight beyond your double bubble circle. In the Netherlands, the public health department there has talked about, especially to single people, you know, if you are single and you're sexually active, find a partner for, you know, at least the duration of the pandemic who is essentially a sex partner. But for you to be sort of isolated in terms of your sexual activity to one other person, if that's what you need. And those are different approaches in different places. Do you feel, Jace, like there's been anything approaching those ideas or at least that kind of public discourse on behalf of government leadership, public health here?
Not even close. I think we're sort of forced to find those stories and those ideas on our own, usually via the internet, an independent search. But even if you're finding those resources and those great creative ideas on your own, if that's not normalized culturally nationwide, like it is in a place like South Korea or the different tactics in Scandinavia and Canada, if you're the only person who's putting these certain precautions in place, you're going to feel very gaslit. You're going to feel weird. You're going to feel like you're overreacting. And if nobody else is abiding by that, you're the party pooper. You're ruining everyone else's fun, rather than this, like Danielle was saying, collective responsibility of we're all putting these quirky new practices into place to our
population. Yeah, we lost you for a sec there, Jason. Just hang there for a sec. We'll make sure we clean up the connection, and I'll turn to Michaela to kind of jump in with the same kind of just the perspective on what you think, Michaela, when you hear a lot of the criticism of a single age group right now.
I agree a lot with Tanner in the fact that it is a mixed bag. There are people in our generation who some feel, okay, this is serious. I need to abide by these rules. I need to protect my grandparents. I need to protect my parents, who really have this mentality of this is serious, this is real, and I need to do this for as long as I can. And then there's also some people in our generation who have that mentality of I want to enjoy my summer. I didn't, quote unquote, ask for this. I just want to go out. Things are open now. I want to just finally be able to enjoy my summer. So it truly is a mixed bag of just depending on the person and their true mindset of it all. I know people that when it first started were like, you know, it's fine. It's not going to get to us. I'm going to keep living my life. And then there were some people that I knew that were like, no, we need to take this serious. I'm going to get a mask immediately. I'm going to social distance immediately. So it truly is just depending on the person. I would say exactly like people mentioned earlier that our generation truly is split. There are those people that do want to go out and don't want to have to think about it, but then there's those people that are like, this needs to be taken serious because if we are trying to quote-unquote enjoy our summer, we won't be able to enjoy our fall and winter if we keep going out and not practicing social distancing, because then you're going to hit that second wave. So it's really a mixed bag, and difficult to kind of pinpoint one generation, because I know there's some people from older generations that are fighting the mask wearing, and then there's some that aren't. So it's really just truly a mixed bag, like Tanner had said.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we have a little bit of a myopic Northeast viewpoint when we think about summer, because I've said many times, get outside, it's summer, get outside. And now we're seeing Arizona, Texas, Florida with some of the highest rates of new cases. And a lot of us in the Northeast are going, well, how can that be? Everybody should be outside. Well, this is the time of the year where those states go inside because it's too hot.
Yeah.
And so I know it's not easy just to snap your finger and make one guideline for all states or all regions at all times, but we are certainly at a stretch of time where being outside is going to be a lot better for public health than being inside, especially as we look ahead to fall, winter, which, you know, could be pretty grim if case numbers don't come down here. And so, Michaela, I'll start with you on this one. There's a growing discussion about whether governments, and usually state governments, but sometimes local, whether governments moved too quickly to reopen bars. I'm not necessarily even talking restaurants for indoor seating, which are part of Phase 4 in New York State, but bars, establishments that are mostly bars. And they're open, and people are going, especially in your age group. And there is a talk now. New Jersey's governor just said, we're going to pull back on this. We were going to do it this week. We're not doing it. And there's a lot of talk about what happens if you close bars now, that they could be permanently closed if the federal government doesn't step in and say, we're going to sort of bail you out. Now, that's a separate discussion with policymakers, but let me ask all of you. If bars were closed, you think your age group would think that's fair, that that's wise, that that's just part of the deal right now, Michaela?
I personally do, yeah. I feel like a lot of people would understand, okay, you know, we're still in that phase of quarantining, bars can't be open. But again, as it goes before with the whole mixed bag, some people are going to have that mentality of, this is totally unfair. Why do we still have all these bars and restaurants closed? Personally, I feel like we opened bars a little bit too soon because of people in my generation who are kind of like bar crazed and want to be out and drinking with their friends, where I feel like, why don't we wait until it's completely safe and then you can have all the fun you want? So I definitely think that it is the mentality that some people would completely understand, and some people, again, would have that mindset of, I just want to be out, I just want to have fun, why are bars open, why are bars closed? So it really just depends on where you are and your mentality and even who you surround yourself with, because you could have people who are telling you yourself, like, this isn't safe, we shouldn't go, or you have people that are around you saying, we should go, we need to have them open. So it's really about mindset and who you surround yourself with as well.
Okay. Jace, you think closing the bars could happen, and you think how might it be received?
I think it needs to happen. Bars are terrifying me. It's not like a restaurant where you can go in and you're only sitting with your party with those one, two, three people that you came with, and then you leave. Bars are about mingling. There's a lot of touching the same surfaces and glassware. People are going to have their masks off because they're sipping their drink all throughout the evening. And I think we're going to get a lot of pushback when we realize just how much transmission is happening there, because people have had that taste of freedom. And they have sort of told themselves that the worst of it is over because they opened so soon. I think it's going to be real challenging to try to pull back on that.
Yeah, I think it would be very difficult, as Jace makes the wise point, to take a step forward and then come back here. But it may happen. I mean, it may be a case of analyzing better and growing bodies of data and saying it's just a transmission question. Danielle, do you think a closure of bars would go over well enough with your generation?
Probably not, to put it lightly. I think it boils down to an ideology of like where you personally are. So similar to the mentality aspect, like if your ideology is you want to go out and have fun, I mean, which is what a lot of 20-somethings our age are into, then it's not going to be a popular move. But, you know, personally speaking, where I am in my life, and I'm not a huge bar goer, and I've moved past that phase in my life. So I personally think it's the right decision. I think it's the right move to make our society safer and to heal from this pandemic faster. But I think in a hedonistic society where there's such an emphasis on immediate satisfaction and gratification, it's unfortunately not very practical and not a popular opinion because people, again, going back to that point of they just sort of want to go out and enjoy their summer and sort of take back what has been taken away from them in a sense. But I think it's unfortunate because I think if we had acted sooner and made the right decisions earlier, then we probably could have, like, healed from this a lot faster. But now it's just we're sort of in a place where we're inevitably going to be in this for probably another year, year and a half. I mean, we never know. You can't predict the future, but... Yeah, and I mean, just to go off of the mask thing really quickly one more time, I think that our society was sort of damaged by this early perception that wearing masks is not going to help at all,
mm-hmm.
Especially coming from major organizations and outlets that people were looking to for support and guidance. And so that, in the beginning, I think hindered our progress and, you know, where we could have been now had it been implemented earlier.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I mean, the whole idea of science is that as you get new and better data, you can change your mind and adjust to it. Now, I know some of the trust was lost when there was some admission from some members of government that, well, we didn't want people to take all the N95s because we were really low on PPE. We needed those for hospital staffs. They could have communicated that so much better, and there's no question about that, Danielle. Danielle's making such an important point. That impacted people of every age group in American society, and we are still bearing the cost of that right now because the evidence is very clear that masking is not a cure-all, but it is darn sure a big, big tool if you want to reduce spread. It's one of the most important. And Danielle's right. You come from South Korea where it's common. People know to do it. Boom. To hear, and the first message from public health is, well, we're not sure it'll help. Probably don't need it. And now you got to get people to turn the ship in a whole different direction. A very, very difficult thing to do. Tanner, in bars, what do you make of the idea that bars could reopen as they are and then we could see closures again?
Yeah, so I think this is where I start to differ from some of my other panelists on here. You know, I think it would be a big mistake to roll back some of the reopening. You know, well, I do understand the concerns of having bars be hotspots, and by no means am I saying that means, you know, reopen the clubs and get everybody on the dance floor together. But I don't think you can roll back. I think it's that balance that everybody's talking about is, you know, reopening too fast and risking a spread of the infection or not reopening fast enough and watching some of these small businesses start to really wither away. You know, I have a lot of close family friends that own bars and they're very responsible with it, with wearing masks. If you stand up from your table, you have to put a mask on. And then obviously we see it in the press all the time. You see pictures of other bars where people are, you know, all on top of each other and no one's following social distancing. And I think some of the blame can go to the people that are attending the bars, which is our age group. But I think there's not enough being said about those bars that are following the right guidelines and trying to keep safe. And then the bars that are allowing people to break social distancing and really see a start of the spread. So overall, I think it would be a big mistake to start to roll some of these back. I think we'll start to see more and more small businesses disappear. And then on Danielle's point, I think she had a good point as to where people are frustrated by the lack of, you know, cohesiveness with if masks are important. You know, at first don't wear a mask, it doesn't do anything, and now it's wear a mask, and you have the CDC saying one thing, and then now the WHO is saying that it's not as spreadable through surfaces. So I think it's very frustrating for people of our age group, and I think for everybody, where we're getting these conflicting reports that are changing. You know, in the beginning of this, they were almost changing every day, and now they're changing all the time, you know, as to what is safe, what is not. But I think overall on this question, my point is it would be a big mistake to start to roll these back as we see small businesses continue to suffer.
Okay. And if we do see, for example, a rollback on bar opening, Tanner, you work in government affairs. Do you think there needs to be some more support for business owners? Because this is not, you know, this is not businesses bungling something and seeing their businesses close. This is not an individual failing or a mistake on the part of ownership. This is a circumstance out of their control.
Exactly. And I do agree. I think if there was a decision to start to roll back, I think there, and even without the decision to roll back, I think there needs to be more support for these small businesses. I mean, you look all around and you read the, you know, you read the news and you see all these businesses are unfortunately closing down. And I think without more support from the government, have that be another round of loans, have that be more support with, you know, with grants or whatnot, I think it's important to continue to support these businesses. And it would be a mistake to go back on the reopening process and not offer additional support to these guys. Because as you said, they're suffering out of something that's out of their control. And with the PPP loan, I mean, that helped a lot of businesses. But for places like bars and restaurants, you know, you have to keep your staff on. But what do you do with them if you shut them back down? I just think it's a tough question. But I think if anything happens, everybody has to keep in mind that small businesses need to continue to be supported. And I don't think that's effectively happening even right now.
Talking to a panel of 20-somethings who are talking to us about their experiences during the pandemic, but also maybe some of the ways that in the last week or two, their generation is being talked about and sometimes blamed for the fueling of the pandemic. We do see statistical evidence indicating that a plurality, if not majority, of new cases in some places in the country, the biggest hotspots, are fueled by people between the ages of 18 and 29, people in their 20s, some in their 30s, but under 40 is a big, big number of cases. That was not necessarily the case early on during the pandemic. It is the case now. We've seen bars, restaurants, a lot of places reopen and a lot of summer activity return. And the question now becomes, what's the right balance? I mean, Jace Meyer-Crosby used that term earlier, and I think that's so important. Nobody is sitting here saying businesses should all be closed or no one should ever leave their house. I mean, that just doesn't work, and that's not realistic. It's a question of what the right balance is and if we can talk monolithically about age cohorts and talk about what we expect. So Michaela Heath, Jace Meyer-Crosby, Daniel Oakes, Tanner Schmidt, all guests of ours, sharing their thoughts. And after our only break of the hour, we've got some audience feedback to bring in as well right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we've talked to civil rights activists, we've talked to members of Rochester City Council, we've welcomed the president of the Rochester Police Union, and next hour we bring in leaders from United Christian Leadership Ministry, an organization that's been working on police community relations for years in our community. What do they think should happen with policing? What's viable? What can actually get done? We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, so let me work in some of the feedback, and I'm going to start in Geneva. Kevin, first up. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Two points I'd like the panelists to comment on. Number one, in the 1940s, the Greatest Generation had to sacrifice much of their youth to fight a world war that was necessary to fight. Why aren't they pitching in as much as they should now and then whining about going to bars? Second point is, if they are going to allow folks to gather in those large gatherings, why shouldn't they be the last in line to get into the hospitals, and why shouldn't they be paying their own hospital bills? That's all the old codger has to say.
Kevin, the old codger, self-identified. Kevin, thanks for the phone call. Let me ask all of our guests if they think that's fair. Michaela, he says in the 1940s, that generation sacrificed some of their youth to fight a world war because they knew it was right. And from his perspective as a quote-unquote old codger, he doesn't see the same level of sacrifice. Is that fair or unfair, Michaela?
I think it's definitely fair. He definitely has a point that they did have to sacrifice, so why aren't our generation doing the same? And again, I think that's some of the mentality and the thought process that some of the 20-somethings in our generation have. It's unfortunate, but it is that selfishness. I know a lot of people in my of my friend groups that aren't treating it as such. They're treating it, you know, we need to think of others just like they did in the 40s, thinking of others. We have to do this war. But there is that mentality that some people have where they just don't think like that. And it is unfortunate, but it's true that some people genuinely just are selfish when it comes to all of this. And they just need to think of long term.
Okay.
And I can't really speak on everybody for that, but I definitely think it depends on the person, unfortunately.
Okay, Jace?
I'm definitely going to push back against the narrative that it's because of selfishness that this group is contracting and transmitting the disease so much, because I think we're kind of neglecting the fact that millennials and Gen Zers make up the vast majority of essential workers and frontline workers. Not only is that a hugely represented group in the healthcare field, but also if we're talking about low-paying jobs like in grocery stores and providing food and cleaning services and all these other things, we're being exposed at a much higher rate, and we're not being offered the option for unemployment necessarily because these essential businesses are staying open. So we're being forced to endanger ourselves for the sake of a corporation that wants to stay open without being given any recourse to stay home and stay safe. So I think that's why even before anything started to reopen, this age group was already uniquely vulnerable and already transmitting COVID-19 at higher rates.
I think that's a very fair point to make. Yeah. Danielle, what do you think?
I agree with a combination of what Michaela and Jace both said. So I'd like to reflect their sentiment. But when I heard Kevin's question, I immediately thought of Confucianism in Korea. So Confucianism is deeply rooted in Korean values. And I think that when you think about traditional values going back to, you know, the World War and everything, we definitely did have more traditional family values and more of a respect, I guess, probably for the society as a whole and the feeling of collectivism and, like, we need to do our part and respect for the elderly. And I think perhaps it's a combination of what Michaela said as just us being selfish and unaware of the ramifications and of our behavior and the impact. But then also what Jace said about us making up a huge portion of the working population in the most vulnerable positions. So, yeah, it's not a single answer. I mean, there's a lot of angles and facets to it.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of nuance. Tanner, what do you think?
Yeah, so, you know, of course we're grateful for the men and women that sacrificed back during that time when we needed them to step up, you know, during World War II. But I would just like to push back a bit. I think, you know, the government opened up the bars. You know, the bars are open not because 25-year-olds opened them up or 20-year-olds mm-hmm. opened them up. It's because the government opened up. So I guess my pushback would be if they're open, are we still, you know, the people that want to take the risk, and I understand that some people don't, and that's within their right, but I think if the bars are open, it's completely within our right to be allowed to go until the government says anything different.
I don't disagree with you. Let me just say, Tanner, I think this is one of the most important points. We're all acting shocked that adults are going to bars. Well, the bars are open. They didn't rip the doors open and start manning the bar themselves. They headed out when the government says, here's a green light. You're making a very important point, but you also made the point, Tanner, that you don't think government should then say, well, we've got enough data to close the bars here.
Yeah, and I could see how that conflicts a bit. I guess, you know, my point is the bars are open. The governor says all the time during his daily press briefings that he's opening based on the data. So if the data was there to make it safe to reopen these bars, I guess my point is until that data points to the governor and says, let's close them, mm-hmm. they should remain open and people should be allowed to go. Now, I'm in full agreement with the other panelists, and I'm sure with most of New Yorkers, that if the rise in the cases continue to spike and we continue seeing those things, I mean, even people like me who want to keep business opening, who wants to keep it going, I can't argue against the data. I just don't think that data is there yet to justify closing the bars down and going backwards. I think there needs to be further guidance. And again, to that point, I think if the government opens the bars, you know, is it our fault for us going?
Yeah, yeah. No. And I think what I'm hearing you saying is right here, Monroe County or Western New York, we're open because the curve has been significantly bent. We've got one of the lowest transmission rates in the country. But what if Houston came out today and said, we're closing bar? Well, I mean, they've done, that's what's happening in a lot of places in the South. Right. But does that make sense to you?
That does, because you, and again, it's all about that data. You see the data down there. You see that the cases are rising significantly in Florida as well. I mean, Houston is the hotbed of it. Florida, you see it as well. They reopened very quickly. They kept things open. Mm-hmm. They saw the cases rise and they waited to close. Now, again, I see where I'm kind of going in between my points, but I think until the data starts to point to where we're going, to where Houston was going or Florida, even before we get to that point, but if the data is showing that, then I'd be happy to close down and stop going out to the bars. But until the governor comes out and says he has this data to justify closing it, I think it's a mistake to walk backwards.
Yeah, I hear you. Doug writes to the program and says, Evan, I feel as though this is all a false dichotomy. There are plenty of Gen Xers and boomers that are completely ignoring the social contract as well. I'm with you, Doug. If you just look at viral videos, and you never want to extrapolate too much from what goes viral and apply it to a whole population, but I'm pretty sure every viral video I've seen of people who are just furious to be asked to wear a mask has not been Gen Z or probably even millennials. It's older people, and they are angry. So, yeah, I take that point, Doug. I appreciate that. And that's why I think our panelists are – this is a fantastic conversation, really thoughtful people. We're not trying to overgeneralize, but we're trying to understand how to kind of thread a very difficult needle during a pandemic. Let's get back to your phone calls. Mark in Pittsford is next. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A previous point about the masking guidelines that was dynamically changing. With regard to that, how many people just take it for granted that the operating system on their phone is going to get upgraded, or that new versions of software are going to come out that need to be changed if you want to play your favorite video game? And we just take that in stride that things are modified. The same thing can be thought of as far as the guidelines for masking, no masking, social distancing, et cetera. And, you know, so I just wanted to comment on that.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much. So, all right, Tanner, he's challenging you there. He's saying, yeah, you said that the guidelines kept changing, and that was frustrating, you know, how it transmits and what we know about masking. But he says you've updated your phone 3 times in the last year and you didn't complain about that. You can update your knowledge of viruses. That's kind of funny, but I mean, I take his point. What do you think, Tanner?
Yeah, I can absolutely see his point. I think my pushback would be, you know, I think the younger generation, in speaking for the friend group that I grew up with and the people that I know, I think we're not as keen to be constantly checking the news. I know everybody has a Twitter feed, but I don't think everybody is so plugged into what's happening. So I think my point of the guidance being frustrated is it seems to be confusing people to where they're not sure what they should be doing anymore. And I think where I would have liked to see it go is having more broadcast of what the guidelines are. Mm-hmm. I know another panelist had mentioned that it needs to be, you know, it needs to be more widespread information. I think if you're not watching the daily briefings or checking, you know, the governor's page, it's hard to see that. And I think it's just frustrating for people our age that one day we're not, you know, don't wear a mask, and the next day wear a mask. But I definitely see his point. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And that reminds me then, producer Megan Mack, Rob Braden and I, we're gonna bring in Dr. Mendoza at the nearest opportunity. That's our next call. We're going to put out the bat signal for Dr. Mendoza, because Tanner's point is that everyone needs, you know, sort of reminders on where we are now. We're not exactly where we were on March 15th or April 15th or even May 15th in terms of understanding, you know, what we do and don't know about this virus and how it transmits and what expectations are out there. So, all right, it's the Mendoza bat signal, and we'll see how soon we can get Dr. Mendoza in, the busiest man in Rochester. I want to get back to, let's see here, Maggie in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hey, I had a couple points. First, I think that this is a really interesting opportunity for us as younger people to take a look at the way that we frame socialization in general. I think that there's this attitude among younger people that bars are somehow an essential business, that you can't socialize or see people outside of a bar, right? So this idea that, like, people haven't been able to do anything. Well, they've been able to do things. You could still visit with people outside. You could still go for a walk. You just couldn't go to the bar. So I think, like, having a moment where we're a little bit more reflective on that makes sense. And then to the point that keeps being brought up about evolving guidelines about masks, I think it's really important to realize the fundamental failure of federal leadership that has led to so many problems in this pandemic. If we had had a fully stocked national stockpile of personal protective equipment, there wouldn't have been a need to discourage mask wearing at the beginning of the pandemic in order to avoid there being a run so that doctors could do their jobs. By the time mask wearing emerged as advice, it emerged into an already politicized environment, right, where then people were making these decisions based on politics, not based on science. And we've seen a failure of federal leadership at every level. We've seen a failure of federal leadership to support small businesses so that they can stay closed and keep people safe, and so that we can prioritize public health over these sort of economic concerns, which becomes really grotesque, this idea of how many people should we sacrifice in order to get business up and running again. We shouldn't have to make those kind of decisions.
Yep.
And I just want to push back a little bit on the person saying that people don't know what the guidelines are. If you're younger people are tech savvy, this information is not difficult to find, and the idea that people just don't know what the recommendations are, that's just a cop-out, frankly. So thank you.
Thanks, Maggie. So there's a lot there, and I'm going to let everyone respond here. But Maggie's phone call makes me realize we should put the bat signal out for bar owners. It's about that time, because this is the most Dr. Anthony Fauci quote ever, and it's from 20 minutes ago. Anthony Fauci today talking to Casey Hunt of NBC News. You ready for the quote? You can hear it in Fauci's voice. The quote is, bars are really not good. That is the most Anthony Fauci quote ever. Now, I want to see more context, because I don't necessarily think Fauci's saying every bar in America should close right now. But I do agree with Maggie on at least that latter point. If we end up going in that direction, it's not the fault of bar owners. And I know a lot of great people who work in that business, and we care about them. So whatever ends up happening, you darn well better be ready to help. And what that means long term. But let's have a conversation, and we'll put out the signal. We want to talk to bar owners in the future. Now, Michaela, she says that there's this false idea that bars are the only place to socialize. What do you think, Michaela?
I agree with that. It's definitely that socialization that we need bars to have fun, and I don't think that's necessarily true. Exactly like she said, you can go out and take walks with your friends. You guys can have social distance gatherings in your own backyard. So to have this mentality that we need bars to have fun, we need bars to socialize, it is a false idealization in its own sense. But I definitely agree with a lot of her points as well. Just as, like she said, we have the technology, so we can find the guidelines, we can find the regulations. So I think Maggie brought up a lot of really good points.
Okay, Jace?
I agreed with everything that Maggie said, especially about the politicization of safety and how we landed in this place where we can't agree that everything needs to be locked down because that one governor in New York that we don't like in our state thinks it's important to lock down, and we can't side with that. And, we have to blame the protesters who are protesting, the racialized violence against Black people. We have to blame them for transmission, even though we can track contact and transmission back to graduation parties that boomers and Gen Xers are throwing for their Gen Z kids way more than we can track anything back to a protest, because the people at protests are using personal protection equipment. So I think the fact that that keeping everyone safe and causing less loss of life has become an inherently political issue is probably the most dangerous thing that we're seeing, and why we're seeing a little bit of that generational conflict over this.
Amen. I was so naive, and I've said it so many times, but I can't believe how we went into this pandemic, and I thought this will be the thing that ends the culture war, because we won't politicize this. That's really well said, Jace. Danielle, what do you think?
I think that this pandemic has created a unique opportunity for us to connect in more meaningful, different ways. But I think for habitual bar goers, it's difficult for them to maybe alter their idea of what is fun to them. And so I think that has to do, that contributes to it, definitely. But yeah, there are so many other ways for us to connect and see each other that doesn't involve going to bars. So I hope that people consider that moving forward. But in terms of the evolving guidelines, I think the point that I want to make is that many people were following the guidelines in the beginning and were aware of the guidelines, and the guidelines that health organizations and officials were recommending was to not wear a mask because it wasn't going to do anything. I remember being in Korea and seeing so many things circulating on social media about how, your mask isn't going to do anything. Listen to the CDC, listen to the World Health Organization. And I was sitting there in Korea sort of conflicted, because I was like, well, these health officials are saying this, but we're all wearing masks in Korea. And I think going back to the point about updating your phone, I totally respect and see his perspective. But, I mean, you update your phone to get something better that wasn't there before. But there was a plethora of research before that that proved the effectiveness of masks. Mm-hmm. And, so I think that as regulations evolved, which I totally get, and I understand that we had a shortage of masks to begin with, but there was evidence that proved the effectiveness of masks before.
Yeah. And 45 seconds for Tanner. By the way, Fauci said that to Senator Mitt Romney, as Casey Hunt of NBC News reported. He's talking to the Senate right now. That's where that quote came from. Tanner, final thoughts from you. Go ahead.
Yes, 45 seconds. So I agree with the first point that bars are not the only place to socialize. And I think I want to clarify my point of the frustration with the mixed signals and having guidance change. I agree that we can keep up with the guidance. I guess my overarching point with that is that I might have not expressed well is that it's frustrating that the WHO is saying one thing, the CDC says one thing, our local governments are saying something else. You know, the federal government is off in la-la land, and then the state government saying other things as well. I think that's where my frustration is. You know, the WHO...
Go ahead, Ken. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. The WHO, you know, came out and said that it's not as easy to contact the virus over surfaces as usual, and the CDC pushed back on it. So that's where my frustration is, that we don't have one clear voice on what's going on with the guidance. I think there's guidance from all these different places.
I hear you, and there's got to be consistent communication at least. And it's okay for government
Absolutely.
To say we don't know everything, and some of what we know will change, but it's got to be clear and consistent communication, and that is an important point. Tanner Schmidt, Danielle Oakes, Jace Meyer-Crosby, Michaela Heath, fantastic conversation, a really thoughtful panel, and I want to thank all of you for being generous with your time with us today.
Thank you very much.
Great stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you to all of you. All right, short break, more connections coming up.